the shiur, but okay, we'll see what happens. Okay, so what I was going to start with, I was going to explain what the International Dateline is, but you guys probably know what the International Dateline is. I don't need to explain it to you, but we'll start with, and I'm sure you guys have thought about this before, why there seemingly, halakha has to acknowledge, even though we'll see that not everybody agrees to this, but the halakha has to acknowledge that there is such a thing as an international dateline, right? Because if you think about it, right, let's say it's 6 p.m. in New York, right? So when it's 6 p.m. in New York, it's 5 p.m. in Chicago, and it's 4 p.m. as you go further west, let's say in Colorado, it's 3 p.m. in L.A., right? You keep going, let's say on Sunday, right? So it's Sunday, 6 p.m., 5 p.m., 4 p.m., 3 p.m. You keep going around the world, right? 2, 1, midnight, right? And then it goes back, it becomes, if you keep going back, so then it becomes, eventually it'll become Saturday at, whatever, before midnight, and you keep going around the world, right? 24 times. So eventually, if you follow that pattern, you'll get to the point where it's 6 p.m. on Shabbat instead of being 6 p.m. on Sunday, meaning because if you keep going back, if you look at the world, right, and you keep viewing the world being 1 hour behind, 1 hour behind, 1 hour behind, and you keep that process going all the way around, eventually you'll get back to the point where you started, but it won't be 6 p.m. Sunday, which is the time you thought it was, but it will be 6 p.m. Saturday. So it can't be both 6 p.m. Sunday and 6 p.m. Saturday at the same place at the same time, obviously. So therefore, there must be some place in the world, as you guys are aware, where the day must shift, right? And it will go from, as you're going, let's say, from east to west, so therefore, you will go ahead one day, right? You go from east to west, you'll go ahead one day. Because there must be some place where the day actually begins, right? Going from west to east, a place where the day actually begins, and therefore, once you cross that place where the day actually begins, so really, you're going to the end of the day, right? You're starting at, let's say, at whatever point in the day you are, but you're going to 24 hours ahead of where you are, which is why the day changes, when you cross the international dateline heading from east to west. That's the basic sivara of why there has to be an international dateline. There's different ways of explaining it. Also, like, if you go, let's say, it keeps getting an hour later, each hour you head east, right? Or an hour earlier, each hour you head west, right? So then you'll end up on the other side of the world, let's say 180 degrees, right? And if you're going east, it's 12 hours later. If you're going west, it's 12 hours earlier, right? Which is a contradiction. It has to be either 12 hours later or 12. It can't be both 12 hours later and 12 hours earlier. So therefore, there must be at some point again where the day is going to change, and therefore that would even out all the days. So that's the basic svara why you need to have an international dateline. I'm sure you guys are aware. You guys travel it all the time. Right, if you look at this map over here, I'll give you this map over here. There's a website, a very interesting website called olamot.net. Have you ever come across olamot.net? No. So olamot.net is, I think it's sort of supported by this guy. His name is Tzvi Reisman, he's from LA. And he wants to have this program where people can have shiurim in like all these communities. So he has somebody who puts together every week a new shiur with like 30 pages of these types of Maariv HaKohen booklet with like hundreds of sources or dozens of sources, and then an outline of the shiur and a detailed description of the shiur. It's a fantastic resource if he has any topic that you're interested in. So he has one shiur on the international dateline. So if you look at this shiur he has on the international dateline, so he has some maps. So you guys are very familiar with this map. I don't need to explain it to you so much. But if you look at the bottom of page 20, so that's the standard international dateline. It's actually in a pretty good place because basically there are very few places where you're really going to have any land masses meeting on opposite sides of the international dateline. Most of the international dateline is just the Pacific Ocean, right? If you look at the bottom of the map, so you do have New Zealand directly to the west of the international dateline. And then if you look to the north, so then you have the Bering Straits, where really Alaska and Siberia really cross, but there aren't really so many people probably at the western edge of Alaska, and there aren't so many people at the eastern edge of Siberia, so you don't really have so many problems with people, with like confusions of crossing the international dateline, right? And then Hawaii, you'll see, is in the middle, on the east of the international dateline. So this is an arbitrary point that was chosen, as you guys know, 180 degrees east of Greenwich, England, right? Greenwich is the center of the world, right? They're the prime meridian, the zero latitude at Greenwich. So 180 degrees to the east is basically where they try to draw the international date line. Sometimes it shifts maybe a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, whatever, because they're trying to, again, they're trying to avoid running through any land masses, because if you, we'll see later on, if you run through a land mass, then you have the problem that on one side of the street it's Monday, one side of the street it's Tuesday, right? That's kind of crazy situation that you're trying to avoid. So as you see, they zigzagged it, you know, by the get south of Alaska, so they zigzagged it to the west, and then they went south to try to avoid running into any land masses or any issues like that. Okay, so that's the those are the basics of the international date line and what it did today. So if you look at the maps, so basically Siberia is to the west and Asia, all of Asia is to the west. You'll see Japan in there, it's pretty far to the west. Australia, Indonesia, those are all to the west, right? If you look at Greenwich, England, you could probably see Israel somewhere here, also Yerushalayim, right? That's where they start the thing, Yerushalayim. So these are all part of the international issue. Alaska's to the east, you know, North America's to the east, etc. Okay, so those are the basics of what exists as the international date line, okay? Mm-hmm. So the thing is that this is an arbitrary point, right? There's no halakhic status to this point. So the question is, is there any indication in halakha where we're going to draw the line, where we're going to create this point where the international date line from a halakhic perspective... Eddie, how are you?
Did you say anything?
I'll fill you in a minute. So can we find a halakhic point where the international date line... Where does halakha think that the day changes, right? Where does halakha think that the day starts? So Eddie, we're just talking about how logically we can sort of prove. Do you travel to the Far East at all?
Yeah, I do.
You do? Okay, good. Okay, good. So logically we can try to show that there must be an international date line, because if there was no international date line, then basically you would come to this absurd conclusion that if you, let's say you kept moving time zones, looking at the time zones, going west and west and west and west and west, and it kept getting earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier, and earlier, when you went all the way around the world, you would come back to where you started and it would be 24 hours earlier than what the time it really is. Because if it's, right, if you're in Chicago, it's let's say right now it's 8:45, so Chicago is 7:45, and 6:45, 5:45, keep going all the way around. So if you kept going, you didn't stop, and you came back to New York, right?
But are there 24 different
so times? You could, in theory, yeah, there are 24 different time zones. Yeah, the world is divided in 24 different time zones. So if you were, let's say, follow those 24 different time zones, right? So
actually, it's 25.
Is it 25?
Yeah.
However it works out. But even if there weren't officially time zones, just if you just in practice, right? Let's say, you know, it's an hour after sunset. So and if you had 15 degrees west, then it'll be an hour. It will be sunset, and 15 degrees before that, it'll be an hour before sunset, and it's going to keep going around the world, right? So basically, you come to this absurd conclusion that if you kept going back, so right now it's, let's say it's Tuesday at 8:45 p.m. It's 7:45. You know, 6:45 eventually, and then you get back to the morning, right? And then it crosses and goes back. And then you come back to New York, and it would be, instead of being Tuesday at 8:45, it would be Monday at 8:45, which can't be. It can't be both Monday and Tuesday at 8:45. You're not traveling. I'm saying this is just looking at the world, right?
Yeah.
It can't be both. So there must be some point in time, right, where the day will change heading west from Monday to Tuesday, right, which would be the, let's say, the beginning of the earth, the beginning of where the day starts, so to speak, on the earth.
Why not heading east?
Because you have the same thing, just backwards, heading east, just later and later and later, and then there must be some point where the day goes backwards to
basically goes to the point of 12 hours ahead, 12 hours. If let's say we're from our end, we're going 12 hours ahead, 12 hours back. You're going as far as what? Hong Kong is?
Hong Kong is 12.
It's the furthest point to the thing. And where is it on this side? You're going to...
There are areas for more than 12 hours ahead.
Well, I mean, again, that's because...
180 degrees on the other side of the world is Hong Kong right now.
Okay.
Oh. Now it gets a little bit more complicated when it comes to Zmanim because... They don't change the clock, we change the clock, uh-huh. And so on and so forth.
Right. From let's say if we're here 12 hours ahead, saying from Hong Kong, there's got to be a place where it's 24 hours behind Hong Kong.
Right.
I think there are places where it's 13, 14 hours ahead of
who's,
us.
Who's 12 hours behind?
There's places that are 20 hours ahead of us.
But again, that's only because of the international date line. That's, right. I mean, that's the point. Meaning the fact
that's
that...
That's the point, that if you go from one side to the... You start going... Both sides, you'll meet at 12 hours.
Where is the international?
Not 20 hours ahead
of us. So as you're walking in, that's
20 hours ahead of
us. If you look at this map, If you look at this map on page 20 on the bottom, right? Look at it. You have it over there. So that's where the international dateline actually is.
So there is technically wherever you are in the world, there is a spot that was just 24 hours ahead of you.
Just think for one second.
No.
The only time that ever happens is if you are directly on opposite sides of the international dateline. So then the place that's right on the other side of the international dateline will be 24 hours ahead of you. But
so where is that? Where is that place?
Oh, you're right. Depends where you are in the world, man.
Right. Right.
If you go a little bit further east from Hong Kong, eventually you're going to hit.
Well, look at the map. Look at the map. I mean, Hong Kong is really not near the international dateline, but let's say you're in New Zealand, right?
No, I'm saying from New York.
Where is it in the middle?
You said it's Greenwich.
London.
Greenwich. Greenwich, England.
It's called Greenwich.
Yeah, Greenwich Medium Time, GMT. Exactly. Yeah. It's Greenwich Medium Time.
So that's zero.
I mean, that's the 0 degrees, and that's called the prime meridian. Okay. And that's where everything from the secular perspective starts. Right, that's the zero line. You can look at the top.
That's zero. That's not the international dateline.
No, it's not. 180 degrees.
180 is.
This is
GMT. That's zero. See the numbers? Zero, yeah. 180. That's GMT.
So from here over here, there's 12 hours ahead, 12 hours behind. That's what it is.
From Greenwich, England. Yes, from Greenwich, England. If you head 12 hours east, you'll be 12 hours ahead. If you head 12 hours west, you'll be 12 hours behind. Correct. Oh. But from us, at some point, you're going to cross days. So you're not going to end up being exactly 12 and 12. Because let's say I'm heading west. So then... Meaning, when I head west from New York, right? So when I cross over the international dateline, so instead of being 12 hours behind, I actually end up being 12 hours ahead. I end up being...
Behind.
When you travel
backwards going across the west. You go east, you go ahead. If you're going to Hong Kong or to India, you're going to get there the next day.
Yeah, I'm saying if I'm going from New York to Hong Kong... Right? So even though the hours keep going back and back and back and back and back and back, but once I cross the date line, I add 24 hours, so I end up being ahead.
I'm just looking at it from my thing. You guys, to go to Hong Kong, you guys go from the west, right?
Yeah, you fly west.
You don't go across the date line.
To India, it goes from the east.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you go from Europe.
You go over Russia.
Sometimes we go over the north. Go see to Seattle, and then you go...
Yeah, that's northwest. I mean, you're still heading west.
Very rarely, in the summer months, they will fly
completely
to Hong
north.
Kong north, and then go over Europe as opposed to over...
Really? That's so interesting. Wow.
On the India side,
it's not very complicated.
No, because India is very clear.
This is only problematic if you go...
west and...
No. If you go...
Yeah.
In theory,
you can keep going east and just eventually cross the internet, or be in places that are safek, which we'll get to, which side of the international dateline they're on. In theory, that such a reality could take place. So for example, New Zealand, right? I'm not sure exactly how many, but New Zealand is probably more than 12 hours ahead of us. They're probably 13 or 14 hours ahead of us, I think. Because look at New Zealand, right? Because New Zealand is basically the first place in the world, the first like settled, civilized place in the world where the day actually starts.
Shabbat is the earliest there.
I mean, that's the first place in the world where it becomes Shabbat, okay. Right?
They always show it as the first place where the calendar
exactly.
changes.
Right, that's when I was giving the shiur before. I told them that I have this very clear memory of seeing the New York Times on January 1st, 2000, on the cover, they had a picture of this guy in New Zealand at an ATM machine celebrating because it was January 1st, 2000. Everybody thought at Y2K the world was going to shut down, right? And his ATM card worked at 12:01 on January 1st, 2000, right? And he was like his hands up in the air celebrating because that's the first place in the world where, according to the secular international dateline, it became January 1st. It became 2000. That was the first place in the world. In Siberia also it did, but there's nobody sitting in Siberia with an ATM machine, so it wasn't really relevant. But in New Zealand, that's the first civilized place. So because New Zealand is...
So like Alaska would be the last place in the world?
Exactly. According to the international dateline, the secular international dateline, the first place in the world for the day to start is New Zealand. The last place in the world for the day to start would be Alaska. Exactly.
Cool. theoretically, if you fly from New Zealand to Alaska.
Yes. You can mess up days. You can have a lot. We can do a lot of. Yes. Well, they're far enough from north and south that it would be. But yes, in theory, yes.
Well, let's say it's you're taking a flight. It's 8 a.m. New Zealand.
Yeah.
And you, according to this, it's 24 hour time difference.
It would be, yeah, something like that. 23 hour time difference, something like that. Right. So basically, you could leave New Zealand on Motzei Shabbat, and then you would arrive in Alaska on Friday night.
Because it's an 8 hour flight.
But right, something like that.
It's a 23 hour flight difference.
Difference, so, exactly. So you end the 15 hours.
You're 15 hours before.
Exactly. So you can celebrate Shabbat again. Correct. Correct.
That's
and conversely,
or you can skip Shabbat.
Exactly. Conversely, you can leave Alaska on Friday at let's say 5 p.m. and you can get to New Zealand on Saturday night.
Okay.
Because you're going ahead a day, and right. So which is really what maybe we'll speak about in part two
that's
this
not
year.
Practical. Most practical is really, I mean.
Neither one's particularly practical.
We have similar scenarios. If you leave Friday morning from Hong Kong to come to New York, you will hit Shabbat in the air, and vice versa. Yes.
You do it on Yom Kippur.
Really?
Can you fast?
It's problematic.
Meaning over where you're flying. You're
really?
Going to where you're traveling.
Really?
In the air,
you will. Really?
And then also when you, huh?
Can you explain that? Is that how? Like theoretically, if you're going from Hong Kong, and it's say,
well, Hong Kong is pretty far west. So it's
a 9 a.m. flight, and then
the 9 a.m. flight somewhere in the middle for 2-3 hours.
Well, where?
Well, before you cross the international date line. Let's say you've been traveling 3 hours, right?
So you're flying this way.
East.
You're flying east, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, let's say you leave at 10 a.m. Let's say, right? You've been flying for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Let's say you've been flying for 3 hours. So now it would be 1 o'clock. In Hong Kong where you left, but you're already let's say 3-4 hours in the time zone is 3-4 hours east
ahead also
behind you. Once you cross that date
line, before you cross the line, that's
the
point. Before you cross the date line,
it's in this region.
All right. So you leave me on what time on Friday afternoon? For
no, Friday morning.
You
take that 9:30 a.m.
flight.
Okay.
So it's 3 hours later. It's 12:30 p.m.
In Hong Kong, but it's 4 o'clock p.m. Yeah.
In the winter, you will hit Shabbat.
In the winter, right?
Oh, in the summer, also.
Oh, okay, you're right.
So, and then you have the same scenarios.
There's
a flight that goes Saturday night, but like midnight,
okay.
Which is
already
Saturday Sunday morning.
It flies
to Vancouver.
So you're going to arrive at some point, it's going to go back to Shabbat.
So again, at the end, you have a two-hour span that's Shabbat.
5 hours from California.
So it's a very common question rather than trying to guess.
Wow.
Can I take that flight, yes or no?
It's winter time by the time you get here.
The answer he usually gives
close to
is that if you're taking the Friday flight,
he's saying the same thing.
Your goal is you want to come home in time for Shabbat to be with your family.
Yeah, you can make it.
You can do it. But don't do the Saturday night because, okay, you come home Sunday or Monday, but... So what do you do in that time? I mean, once you have this money calculated, you don't have to keep. You can't break Shabbat,
right?
But you don't have to keep
make
Shabbat.
Kiddush or anything, yeah.
Exactly.
So what is the problem with Shabbat going to the Far East?
We were just saying.
No, I was talking to Adam. So it's in the winter. It would be taking a Friday.
If you
morning.
Go a Friday morning from Hong Kong to New York, but always
Hong
all
Kong, New York.
Yeah, but
Saturday
always.
Night, not a problem.
No, that's what I'm saying. But it's all year round. You have the problem if the Saturday night flight that goes over Vancouver that leaves at 12:30, that goes from Hong Kong to Vancouver.
Okay.
That hits Shabbat in the air always, summer and winter,
for sure.
So, so the major issue that I read about, again, I haven't looked into it so much, but maybe next time we'll talk about it more, is the issue of Tchum Shabbat. Mm. And while you're on the airplane, there may be an issue of going outside the Tchum. That's the major issue. Unless somehow the airplane has its own tchum, I don't know how that works. I'm not familiar with that.
You're not going to discuss.
Not today, but
I plan on Shabbat. I mean,
maybe next week we'll talk about that more. But now I just want to talk about the main goal for tonight is to talk about where, if and where halacha identifies there being an international date line. Meaning where and if does
halacha. Or this.
Or, right, exactly, right. Does halacha say just follow the secular international date line? Or does halacha have some opinion that maybe there's going to be somewhere else which, according to halacha, the day is going to change or the day is going to begin? That's the question. Okay? So the main source, there's no Gemara which explicitly talks about it. There's no Rambam, there's no Shulchan Aruch that explicitly talks about it, which is actually part of the reason why some people say that maybe Halacha does not recognize such a thing as an international dateline, and you just, which we'll get to, maybe you'll just follow whatever people are doing wherever you are. But there is a Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah. It's a very complicated Gemara, and we'll try to learn and see how Rashi understood the Gemara, and then we'll try to see how the Baal HaMor understood the Gemara. I'm not sure how many different sources we'll have time for tonight, but whatever it is, we can always resume next week or some point in the future. So the Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah says, Kisalik Rebbe Zera, when Rebbe Zera left Babel, Shoshalach Lehu, or maybe he left there, I'm not sure, but Shalach Lehu, they sent him a message, Tzarech Shiehe Laila Vayom Min HaChadash, or Min HaChodesh, this is the question, right? But basically, they said to him, this is here Masechta Rosh Hashanah is discussing calculating the new months, right? Calculating the times and the dates, and exactly at what point in time is the molad of the new month. So it says that you need to have both the night and the day has to be from the new month. We'll have to see a little bit what that means, but the idea is that both the night and the day have to be from the new month. Okay? So which may mean, according to some, that basically the molad would have to take place before Rosh Chodesh. Meaning if the molad would take place later, then maybe you would not be able to establish Rosh Chodesh on that day. Okay, that's a separate discussion. So we make calculations of when the molad is. Nolad kodem chatzot. If the molad is before midday, biyadua shenireh samuch l'shkiyat hachama. So it's possible, we'll see in Rashi what exactly this means, but it's possible that they actually saw the new moon before sunset. So if they come in and testify they saw the new moon on, let's say, Wednesday before sunset, right? If you calculate that the molad, this is how Rashi explains it. If you calculate that the molad was on Wednesday before midday, so then it's possible that they saw it before sunset on Wednesday. Lo nolad kodem chatzot. If the molad was not before chatzot, rather the molad was after chatzot, biyadua sheloni resamuch l'shkiyat hachama. So then you know that they didn't see it before sunset. Okay, just to clarify exactly what the molad is. Basically, as we know, the moon rotates around the earth, right? And at different points, the sun reflects off the moon. It can be seen in different ways, right? And at some point, when the moon is directly across from the sun, you're gonna have that's the middle of the month. You're gonna have a full moon. You can see because the sun is shining directly onto the moon. You can see the entire moon, right? The side of the moon that's facing the earth, right? But
which is tonight?
Which is tonight, right? Or tomorrow night, whatever. It's tomorrow 15th, whatever. Yes. But as you get it gets closer, so you have less and less of the sun, the less and less of the moon that's reflecting off the sun, right, that you can see less and less. That's why the moon gets smaller. And as you get as the moon the month begins, there's more and more you can see until it gets to the full moon at the 15th, right? But there is a point in time where the sun is directly lined up with the moon, and therefore none of the sun's light is shining on the side of the moon that faces the earth. The sun's light is shining on the side of the moon that does not face the earth, on the other side of the moon. Right? So in that case, that's why you can't see the moon. I mean, there are points in time where you can't see the moon because the light of the sun is shining directly. That point in time where the first point where in theory the moon can be seen, in practice it can't be seen yet, but in theory the moon can be seen, meaning the moon moves off the direct alignment with the sun, is called the molad. That's called Rosh Chodesh. That's when the month actually begins. That's halachically when the month actually begins.
When you can first see the moon.
Not necessarily practically see the moon, because there may be some practical differences. First of all, maybe so slight that you wouldn't actually be able to see it. That's one issue. Another issue is that at that time, the moon actually rises and sets at very close to when the sun rises and sets. So therefore, the times that the moon is out, it's actually mostly during daylight hours, and therefore the sunlight is so bright that it overpowers any light that would come as a reflection of the moon. So therefore,
it's not a set date that the molad is.
No, the molad is it's calculated. It's 29 days and a certain number of hours and a certain number of minutes and a certain number of seconds.
29 and a quarter days, pretty much, right?
I don't remember exactly, but it's somewhere between 20.
It's a set date.
It's the time that in theory you can see
when the molad is.
In theory, not in practice. Yes, and if everything was dark.
Our Rosh Chodesh is not always, our calendar is established,
and so
we have a calendar that tells us when Rosh Chodesh is. We don't go by the Molad. Sometimes Rosh Chodesh is Thursday and the Molad is actually Tuesday late.
Could be.
Yeah. Like before Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Because we have a set calendar.
No, but it has. I mean, they made calculations when they set the calendar. They made calculations based on when the Molad was going to be. As to there were certain considerations they had, like related. Some of them related to this Gemara that we're seeing right now. They had certain considerations. I don't know all of them offhand, but certain considerations that they had that they needed to be Rosh Chodesh to be on a certain day for certain reasons, right? Or something. They need a month to be Malay, a month to be Chaser, because they need certain holidays to fall out on certain times. There were certain considerations that they took into account to determine which day actually Rosh Chodesh would be. But the actual astronomical Rosh Chodesh is based on when the Molad was. And they actually had the calculations, very, very precise calculations, very, very close to what we know today to be, you know, NASA's calculations of exactly the amount of time, the lunar, the exact length of a lunar month. They had very, very precise calculations that they knew to determine when the Molad was going to be. So they made those calculations, and based on those calculations, they determined whether or not we could accept testimony that a certain day would be Rosh Chodesh or a certain day would not be Rosh Chodesh. Remember, at the times of the Beit HaMikdash, they only did Kiddush HaChodesh based on testimony, right? They didn't decide on their own. They relied on testimony. They needed testimony to determine when Rosh Chodesh was going to be. Okay? So that's what the Gemara asked. The Gemara asked, L'mai nafka minah? Meaning, if you're making these calculations and you know whether the Molad is going to be before midday or after midday, if it's before midday, so then in theory that day could be Rosh Chodesh. If it's after midday, that day cannot be Rosh Chodesh. What does it make a difference? You're dependent on the testimony of the witnesses, right? So, Amar of Ashi, la'achushe sahadi. No, if you want to contradict the witnesses come and say that we saw it before sunset, and you know that they're lying or that they're making a mistake. Because, you know, based on your calculations, they couldn't have seen it before sunset, because based on when the Molad was. Right? So you want to know when the Molad is. Amar of Bizera, Amar of Nachman, Chaf Dalid Sha'e Mechase Siyar. So for 24 hours, this is the Gemara's understanding, for 24 hours the moon is hidden. Between the time before Rosh Chodesh and the time after the Molad, 24 hours the moon is hidden. Okay? Ledidan, us who live in Bavel, which is further east, Shit Me'atika, 6 hours of the end of the old month, V'tam Nisrei Mechata, 18 hours from the beginning of the new month. Lidit Hu, for those who lived in Eretz Yisrael, Shit Mechata, 6 from the new month, V'tam Nisrei Me'atika, 18 hours from the old month. L'may Nafka Mina, Amar Vashi L'chushe Sahadi. So this is basically the basis for what the Gemara said earlier, right? The way Rashi explains it, let's see the Rashis. Rashi says, "No like kodem chatzot, hayom biyadua shenireh hayom kodem shetishkachama." So then, the day could be seen before the sunset. She'ein halevana mitkasem b'bnei Eretz Yisrael shehem b'ma'arav ela sheisha od achar chidusha mitoch kotna. So because the moon is so small, so for the first 6 hours in Eretz Yisrael, for the first 6 hours, the sun, the moon cannot be seen. Shalvana lo'olam b'sheish shanot la'achar chidusha v'karim ma'arvit ramit v'niretz lahem. After 6 hours, the moon can actually be seen, right? So if the Molad is before midday, right? So then 6 hours later, when the moon in Eretz Yisrael, when the moon can actually be seen, so they could come and they say, we saw the month, right? We saw Rosh Chodesh, right? If the Molad is after midday, so then the moon is disappears. It's not visible for 6 hours after the Molad. So therefore, if somebody comes and says that I saw it before sunset, he's wrong. Either he's wrong or he's lying. Because you can't see the moon until 6 hours after midday, right? That's what Rashi says. That's how Rashi understands the Gemara. Look at the next Rashi also. Lo nolad achar chatzot biyadur shelo yireh hayom shehiktana kol sheish shaot v'ne'alemet mein kol. Right? But if it's...
Only 6 hours?
That's the way the Gemara says it. It's a little bit difficult to understand the Gemara astronomically, but for the purposes of understanding this Gemara, that the Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael, the moon cannot be seen until 6 hours after the Molad. Yes. The Gemara here is talking about, it's an interesting question. The Gemara here is talking about what we call the perfect day, which is 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., where each halachic hour is the same as a clock hour. Right, exactly. 60 minutes, exactly. So that's what the Gemara is discussing right now. So in that sense, right, 6 hours after, 6 hours, for 6 hours after the Molad, the sun cannot be seen. So therefore, if it's before midday, the moon, thank you. If it's before midday, you'll be able to see before sunset. If not, then you won't be able to. Okay,
wait,
so this is, yeah.
My coin, so you're midday is 12,
Yeah, let's assume midday is 12 o'clock, like 6 a.m.
You'll see them. I don't
know. That's what the Gemara says. Yeah, that by 6 p.m. if the molar was at noon, right, or afternoon, by 6 p.m. enough of the moon will be visible that in theory somebody could have seen it, and he can now come in and testify that I saw the moon. Okay, so this is Rashi's interpretation of the sugya, right? Obviously, nothing to do with the international dateline at all, right? And the question is, what would anything do with the international dateline? Nothing, nothing. This is Rashi's interpretation of the sugya. Okay. However, if you look at source number 3, we have the Baal HaMa'or. Okay, the Baal HaMa'or was one of the later Rishonim. He lived in Provence, which is, I think, a part of the south of France, and he was one of the Gedolei HaRishonim. His Pirush is in the back of the Gemara, on the same page as the Rif, right? So the Baal HaMa'or has a completely different interpretation of the Gemara, as follows. Okay, let's see. This is just a section. It's a very, very, very long Pirush. You can look it up. It's mamash incredible. Very long perush, but this is just a section of it. So kisalik Rabbi Zeir Amar sarich she'ilayla v'yom min hachadash. Okay, min hachadash. So this is the Gemara we started with, that the night and the day has to be from the new month. Kulomar, ein anu kovin hayom Rosh Hashanah. We cannot define a certain day to be Rosh Hashanah. Ela imkein hayabo hamolad mitzchilat halayla. He says we cannot determine a day to be Rosh Hashanah unless there is some place in the world where when the Molad happened in Yerushalayim, the day hadn't started yet in that place. Right? When the Molad starts in Yerushalayim, the day hadn't started yet in that place. Ve'af api she'en ha-molad netkan. Even though it only comes after 18 hours after the day starts in Yerushalayim, ve'ein lanu min ha'chadash or min ha'chodesh ela sheish sha'ot, anu motzi makom acher sheish bo laila v'yom min ha'chodesh. Okay, it's a very long Baal HaMa'or, but these three lines I think sum up the basic what we need from this Baal HaMa'or. Basically, what he says is as follows. He says that if you wanted, this is what he understands the Gemara. If you want to establish a certain day as Rosh Chodesh or Rosh Hashanah, or most importantly for Rosh Hashanah, right? There has to be some place in the world where Rosh Hashanah has not begun yet, right? So whatever the time the Molad is in Yerushalayim, you can only establish that day as being Rosh Hashanah if there's some place in the world where it's not Rosh Hashanah yet. At what point in time, until when, can I say that there's some place in the world where Rosh Hashanah has not begun yet? So he says, that the Gemara says, what time is the latest Molad that we can have to establish the day of Rosh Chodesh? What does the Gemara say? Well, what time of the day did the Gemara say?
6 hours after the day.
No, that's how soon you can see the moon. What time does the Molad have to be? So the Gemara said, that Nolam Kodem Chatzot, so that you can make a Rosh Chodesh. Yeah. Midday, right. So midday, this is fascinating, okay? Midday is the latest time in Yerushalayim that I can have a molad and still make that day as Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Chodesh, okay? So that means until midday...
Near that night.
No, I can still make that day. I mean, let's say Wednesday, if I can calculate the molad to be Wednesday at noon, right? Or let's say Wednesday 11:59 a.m., in theory, Wednesday can be... Rosh Hashanah.
Although the morning you did melacha, that day would still...
Right, in theory they could still establish that day as Rosh Hashanah. As long as there's somewhere in the world where I'm going to have a full 24 hours of Rosh Hashanah. So that means that until midday, there is somewhere in the world where Rosh Hashanah has not begun yet. Until midday.
Which is obvious, yeah.
Why is that obvious?
Because of what you just said, the different time zones and international dateline.
Yeah, but where is the international dateline? Meaning, depending on where you put the international dateline, that's not so obvious. Meaning, according to, for example, I mean, it would be very hard to...
He doesn't mention Greenwich. He's saying from Yerushalayim.
Right.
Okay, fine. So it's 11:59 a.m. in Yerushalayim.
Right. That means there's somewhere in the world where it's not 6 p.m. the night before yet. Right? There's somewhere in the world that it's not 6 p.m. the night before yet. So that means...
Meaning that's exactly when Rosh Hashanah would have started.
Would have been started, exactly, 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 right? So that means that I can go 18 time zones up to 18 time zones back, right? And the day has not begun yet. Meaning, when it's noon, right? It's noon in Yerushalayim. There's somewhere in the world where the day has not begun yet. So that means, right, that the first place in the world for the day to start, or let's say the last place in the world for the day to start, is 18 time zones west of Yerushalayim. 270 degrees west of Yerushalayim, or 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. So according to the Baal HaMa'or, the international dateline is actually 90 degrees east of Jerusalem. 90 degrees east of Jerusalem, according to the Baal HaMa'or. Because that's the place, right, which is 18 hours west and 6 hours east, that's the place where the day begins. Okay, so let's look at the next map. We'll make it easier to see. Turn to the other side.
It's remarkable that I was saying stuff like this back then.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
When Baal HaMa'or said something like this, it's crazy. And the Kuzari also, I don't have the quote here, but the Kuzari says this also.
Look at the Kuzari was before the Baal HaMa'or?
I think so. Probably. I think so. Yeah, I think he was. Yeah, I think he was. Wow. Kuzari is pretty early.
Why are they crazy?
Well, they must have had a first of all.
Makes sense what you said, because halachic day they start the day at nighttime. So.
But the fact that they had even a concept of an international dateline.
The time period that you're talking about, I mean, the Baal HaMa'or was
whatever.
Was
later 13th, right? It's probably 12, late 13th century or something like that, or early 14th century. Yeah. So
most of the world was not even discovered then.
Part of the thing is the international dateline is only really an issue if you're traveling around the world. Meaning until you have round the world travel, it's not really an issue. You just head to the east and then you follow the times in the east. You head to the west, you follow the times in the west. Only in like the 15th century when they began heading east and actually going around the world, right? Like that time of Christopher Columbus. So then it became an issue because then if somebody's traveling to the east and somebody's traveling to the west, eventually they're going to meet at some point. If the guy traveling to the east, it's Tuesday. The guy traveling to the west, it's Wednesday. The guy traveling to the east, it's Tuesday. And whatever it is, and they're going to meet at some point, and they're going to have different days, right? It's going to be very problematic.
Yeah.
So then you need an international date and say, no, this is where the day starts. And when you cross that day, you either go back or forth one day.
For them, the world is Mehodu at Kush, right?
Something like that, right. Or from the eastern end of the Asian peninsula till the end of Europe. That's basically the world.
So this is
right?
90 degrees?
So, okay, good. So let's look at this map on the bottom, okay? So you see it says 90 on top, yeah. Right? Because 90 on top means 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. This map starts at Yerushalayim. Right?
Zero.
Yeah, zero all the way on top is Yerushalayim. The zero in the second row is Greenwich. The zero on the top row is Yerushalayim. Right? Mm-hmm. They give you both Greenwich. And you see here, there's this zero. This is zero of Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
And then over here, I mean, this is 15. So mm-hmm. What would be zero over here is Greenwich.
In
right?
The corner, there's no zero over there.
Right, but what would be a zero in that corner would be Greenwich. Exactly. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But the zero that actually is up there all the way on top, that's Yerushalayim. Correct.
So 90 down would be this line.
90 to the east is that line. Now,
so according to this opinion, if you live on this street here in Australia,
it's Shabbat. So because of that, right? So that's one major issue, right? That's one major issue with this with agreeing with this opinion that you end up with having land masses that are split. That is Tuesday on one side, it's just Wednesday on the other side of the street, which is very problematic, right?
Especially
that's one
publishing
issue.
Your newspapers.
Exactly, and keeping Shabbat, whatever, all those things.
That problem exists with the dateline.
In the middle of nowhere, exactly. Right,
that's
right, but I'm saying, but according to the Baal HaMa'or, right.
But this, obviously, Halacha doesn't go by that.
Well, maybe. Hold on. Well, hold on. So
three different opinions we're going to get to.
So I'm saying, so if you draw an international dateline there at 90 degrees, right, so you are going through a lot of land masses. So the Chazon Ish, he was a big, big, big proponent, and we'll see it in one of his letters, but he was a big, 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 maybe next week we'll see it, but a big, big proponent of the opinion of the Baal HaMa'or, right, that it should be 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. He also held that you can't split land masses in half. You can't split land masses in half. That's why you notice that a lot of these land masses, even though they're to the east, they're shaded in the dark color. Because those land masses...
So he's saying once you hit it...
Correct.
Fill the rest.
So Siberia, Asia, all those places are gonna follow the western side of the international dateline, which makes things a lot easier. Let's say for Hong Kong, right? Where even according to the Chazon Ish, even though Hong Kong is directly to the west of Japan, right?
What does he base that?
Wait, Hong Kong is over here, right? Is that correct? Is it? Yeah. Geography? Mm-hmm. So Hong Kong is over there. So Hong Kong will be on the western side of the international dateline, which fits with the secular international dateline as well. Right? According to the, because since you're going to follow the Asian landmass, you're going to push everything to the west.
What? So I understood how you get the 90 on the Balamar, but how did he...
So I think it's at least partially Misvara. Maybe he had some earlier sources also. But basically, based on this, it doesn't make any sense to have... there's no Svara that I can have Shabbat on one side of the street and weekday on the other side of the street. So it must be that an international dateline must go around the land masses. That's the Svara of the Chazon Ish. I was reading something today. I don't know. I was reading something today where he quotes one of the earlier sources that says that makes this argument. But I have a very interesting situation because, for example, look at Siberia and look at Japan, right? So I have parts of Siberia that are actually to the east. Siberia is like the northern part of Asia over there that sticks out. So I have parts of Siberia that are actually to the east of Japan, but they're on the other side of the international dateline. Exactly, right. So Japan, because it's an island, so therefore that's going to follow the east side of the international dateline. Even though it's to the west of some areas that are halakhically to the west of the international dateline, Japan's actually going to be to the east of the international dateline. If you look down to Indonesia, same. Indonesia is to the east.
Which, the top or the bottom?
According to the bottom map on page 21.
Have you been?
It's Japan.
Look.
Show me Japan.
This, you see this line?
Yeah.
Okay? Where your shalom is. Yeah. So you're saying, calculate this as zero. Okay?
And go 90 degrees.
Where does that go? It goes through here.
And that's what they consider the international.
Right, exactly. But,
you can't, because this land, once you hit that land, it extends to the end of the land. So here, for instance, this is Japan. Okay? Japan is not shaded. But you have land here, the corner of Siberia, which here it would be Shabbat, but here it wouldn't because this is following
the even east. Though it's west of...
Exactly, right.
Because
exactly.
Once you hit the land, it fills
the land mass. That's why Australia is the same thing. Look at Australia. Australia, even though the majority is to the east, but since some of it is to the west, the entire thing will go to the west and it will all be, let's say, part of the new day, right? Meaning because the day starts to the west of this land. Right, but if you look at Indonesia to the north, if you look at Tasmania to the south, look at New Zealand southeast, right? All those areas are to the east of the Chazon Ish's international dateline, which is very problematic because they are to the west of the secular international dateline. So according to everybody living, let's say in Japan, right, the day is actually Japan is actually going to be. Pretty early on in the day, and it's going to be Sunday already, right? According to the Chazon Ish, no, it's Shabbat. Because according to the Chazon Ish, this is this is basically the last place in the world for Shabbat to start, right? Like when the Baal Maor says that there's some place in the world, right, that 11:59 p.m. on Rosh Hashanah on Aleph Tishrei, the day hasn't started yet. Look at Kobe, Japan, right? Basically, Kobe, Japan is basically, 268 degrees west of Yerushalayim, pretty much, right? It's right to the east of the 90-degree mark. It's 268 degrees or whatever west, or 250-something degrees, whatever, west of Yerushalayim. So according to the Chazon Ish, what they call Sunday is really Shabbat, right? What they call Shabbat is really Friday. So it's a major problem, right? New Zealand also, right? Okay, so that's the opinion of the Baal HaMa'or, and that's the opinion of the Chazon Ish. Okay, good. So that's opinion number one. So now, who's right? Meaning, if Rashi's interpretation of this Gemara is right, so then there's no real basis for the whole 90 degrees east, right? Because with this Baal HaMa'or, we don't hold to his interpretation of the Gemara. If the Baal HaMa'or is correct, so then it's much more complicated, right? So look at Shut Min HaShamayim. Shut Min HaShamayim is from one of the Baalei HaTosafot. He has certain questions that he asked them in Shamayim to answer him, and he got certain answers, and he wrote this book called Shut Min HaShamayim. So a lot of things are written about Shut Min HaShamayim. So he actually asked this question. What's the correct pshat in this Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah? He actually asked the question. V'od istapaknu b'shalosh mo Masechet Rosh Hashanah shenamru mipi Rabbi Zera, that Rabbi Zera taught. Ha'achat that the night and the day have to be part of the new month, right? Which is what the Baal Mor said means, that you have to have somewhere where it's not Rosh Chodesh yet. All these things. I think it's hasod. Kasher Pisham Harav Zerachia. V'haya yom sheni, okay, found the pshat of Rav Asya. Ulev she'alti yesh lismoch ala perush shepiresh behem Rashi, or ma'ikar kasher pirish Harav Zerachia. So the Shubhi Hashemayim asks, who's right? Is Rashi right? Or is Baal HaMa'or right? Who's right? Okay, the answer is going to be very unclear.
Rav Zerachia is Baal
HaMa'or. Baal HaMa'or, yeah. Baal HaMa'or is Rav Zerachia Halevi. So who's right? So v'hishivu, ma ze miharta limso b'ni, Zarach b'choshech or le'isharei. Very unclear what this means.
Yeah.
It's very cryptic. So if you look at the, this is from the Rav Reuven Margoliot has a critical edition of the Shu'ut Min HaShamayim. He has notes there. He tries to explain it. So he says that Maze Miharta Limtso B'ni is interesting. It's an allusion to what Yitzchak Avinu says to Yaakov Avinu, and it says to. Yes, the Yaakov Avinu, when he comes back very quickly with the food, right? When he sends Esav to get the food, and Yaakov really goes instead, and he brings back the food quickly, he says, Mazeh miharta limtso b'ni, you found it so quickly. So, this is what he says. He says that Rashi is Shlomo Yitzchaki. The author of the Shu'ut Min HaShamayim, his name is Yaakov. So, it's as if Rashi is speaking to the author of the Shu'ut Min HaShamayim and saying, don't be so quick to try to find proofs against me, right? Because he's so excited he found the Baal HaMa'or. Don't be so quick to find proofs against me. But then the second half of the answer says, Zarach b'choshech, Zarach is an allusion to Zarachia Halevi, or La Yisharim, Yisharim is Rashi backwards. Yashar is Rashi backwards. So it's as if, it sounds like a little bit like he's saying from this half, that maybe the Baal HaMa'or is really correct. It's unclear what he really thinks. It sounds a little more like he thinks the Baal HaMa'or is correct. If you look at the Ritzvah and the Ran, they also think that the Baal HaMa'or's pirush is more correct than the Gemara. And this is the opinion of the Chazon Ish. He holds very, very strongly that this is the correct interpretation of the Gemara. And if you look at Rav Schechter, they wrote an article in the RJJ journal based on the Shurim of Rav Schechter, and he has other proofs also. He thinks that this is really the correct opinion, that we should follow the Chazon Ish, that really 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim should be the international date line.
So there are people that would travel and keep differently than...
Or they wouldn't go, B'dafka, yes. But if they would go, so that either Misafek, they would be Choshesh for both days, which we'll see actually that a lot of poskim say that if you're in Japan, Misafek should be Choshesh for both days. We'll see that more next week, right? But...
How does that work?
So what would work is that Shabbat... let's say you would treat that as Shabbat, even according to Chazon Ish, actually, that's Friday. According to Chazon Ish, it's completely Friday. What the secular calendar calls Shabbat, calls Saturday there, according to Chazon Ish, that's 100% Friday.
That's what I'm saying. So what do you keep that as?
Friday. Whatever you do on Friday. It's Friday. And then the next day, which is Sunday on the secular calendar, is Shabbat, according to the Chazon Ish.
So the people that go by...
I'll tell you. We're sort of getting more to the next discussion. Next Shur's discussion. But I think that the more accepted psak is that people, for the most part, treat Shabbat as Shabbat, and then they'll treat Sunday. They won't do Melacha Doraita on Sunday. There are people like that. They don't do anything, but they won't do Melacha Doraita on Sunday, because they're choshesh for the opinion of Chazon Ish. We'll see. Maybe, I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, because I'm not going to go too much longer, but we'll see maybe next week. The big issue is Yom Kippur, because it's very hard and impossible, not recommended, to keep 2 days of Yom Kippur. So, and this actually happened in 1941, which we'll get to, when the Jews were escaping from Europe. Many of them escaped to Shanghai, but before they went to Shanghai, they were in Kobe. They were in Kobe, Japan. So many of the Jews in Kobe, Japan, in 1941, September 1941, they found themselves in Kobe, Japan, and they didn't know what to do, right?
But, I mean, how is that? I mean, you're there, and they have, there is a time when you're there, so wouldn't...
They're wrong.
There's an opinion as to what time it
actually... The time doesn't change, because the sunrise and sunset, the time doesn't change, the day changed. They got the wrong day. They think it's Saturday, but it's really Friday. They think it's Sunday, but because they didn't realize that they crossed the international date line when they're heading east. According to the Chazon Ish, correct? According to the Chazon Ish, that's the mistake. That's what the Chazon Ish would say. It's a very, very, very tricky business, but I'm saying that's what he would say, right? So, maybe we'll do that now. Maybe we'll talk about, because before we get to the second and the third opinions, you have to go. Okay. So we're going to stop in a couple minutes anyway, so you won't miss too much in the recording. But we're going to stop in a few minutes anyways. But let me
just... You fly to India, so it doesn't apply. That's true.
You still have to learn Torah.
By the way, the back of the art scroll on the
Sahib Rosh Hashanah, right,
has a whole thing on it.
Also, did you read it?
I did the Sahib Rosh Hashanah, but I deleted it because how painful it was.
Okay, anyways, so if you look at these telegrams, really interesting telegrams, on page 20 on top. Look at these telegrams. You have a copy, 20 on top? Well, we'll go in a couple more minutes. So he says, look at this telegram, okay? He quotes, he sends this letter to all these rabbis, right? You can see it in English, right? I'll read it to you in English. I'm sorry?
The right one, right?
Yeah, the top right. He has 350 Jews, appeal, rescue, answer immediately, which day to fast Yom Kippur. If you look at read it in Hebrew, it's a little bit actually easier to read in Hebrew. It says, HaMivrak nishlach mikobe shebiyapan, titkabel, venitkabel biYerushalayim, 12th of September 1941, uvo ne'emar, el haribanim, Mishkovsky, Alter, who is the Ger Rebbe, Herzog, that was the chief rabbi of Israel at the time, right, Rav Herzog, Soloveitchik, that's the Brisker Rav, Finkel, he was Rosh Shiva of Mir, Meltzer, as this is Zalman Meltzer, okay, this is the address, right, 350 Yehudim, Mitzchananim, Hitzilu, Anu Miyad, they're saying, save us, answer right away. Be'eze Yom Latzum Yom HaKippurim. What day should we fast Yom Kippur, right? In Kobe, Japan.
But these are people that are living there.
No,
they arrived there from Europe. They arrived there from Europe.
Not left Europe.
Escaped to Kobe. Germany. They'd been there for a few months, but they were in Poland.
They already been there. I mean, this, when they weren't
for a couple of months. Yeah,
so that's the thing that doesn't apply to me. That it's you've been living there for a few months already.
Yeah,
you don't know what day it is. I mean.
So that's the point. I mean, they probably for the most part followed. So I will tell you
this that dateline was according to Chazon Ish would be a problem because if they're flying or traveling, then where does it do? But
well, the problem is he gave the scenario that you actually Shabbat is actually Sunday according to the Chazon Ish, not Saturday.
I mean, when they came from Europe, they came from Poland. They, according to the Chazon Ish, they crossed the international dateline when they made it into Japan. According Japan didn't think they crossed the international dateline. Nobody else thought they crossed the international date line. The Chazon Ish thought they crossed the international date line. That's what he thought. So you're raising a point because they're actually interesting. After World War I, there were established communities in Shanghai, and actually a very very big Rav as their Talmid Chacham in China, and they also had established a smaller community of like 30 families in Kobe. And they actually had kosher shechita there, and they had a shul, and they had a rav also.
There's a lady in my office who was born in the middle of this in Shanghai.
But she was born from the mirror refugees.
From yeah.
Okay, fine. But I'm saying, but before the World War II, I'm saying from after World War I, there was already an established Jewish community there.
Oh.
And that established Jewish community from before World War II, they actually did follow the secular international dateline, and they followed the day that they actually thought it was.
So they didn't follow the Chazon Ish.
Right, right. Because this is actually when the Chazon Ish's opinion became very public. And this is when he really wrote everything he wrote, was about this situation, this story of the Jews escaping. That's when he really began his spreading his opinion.
Okay, which one's the reply?
Okay, so we're not going to get to the reply yet. Because I don't want to spoil it, but what I want to do is I want to just look. Maybe we'll do one more opinion, and then maybe we'll save the third opinion for next week. Maybe we'll do the third opinion first, and then we'll do the second opinion next week. If you look at this third opinion, right? This is the opinion of I wrote Gimel on the other side, right? This is the opinion of Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. He was a big rabbi in Yerushalayim at the time, there in the 1940s, whatever, and he says. Kishem Shata, I'm sorry, he quotes this midrash. There's a Midrash Tanchuma in Parsha Kedoshim that says, "Kishem shehatabur hazanitan," because the is a pasuk that says, and I think Shir HaShirim, right? They use the word they use tabur, which is like belly button, to describe Yerushalayim. So kishem shehatabur hazanatun beemtzah ha'ish, kach Eretz Yisrael natunah beemtzah ha'olam. Just like the belly button is in the middle of the person, Eretz Yisrael is in the middle of the world, right?
So it sounds like he's also saying that it's, that would be 0 degrees.
Yes, but you're not going to go 90 degrees east. You're going to go 180 degrees east. Because if Yerushalayim is the middle of the world, right? That means Correct. The day started halfway around the world east and the day ends halfway around the world west, right? So according to Rabbi Yechiel Michel to Kaczynski, you're actually going to draw the international date line not 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim, but 180 degrees east of Yerushalayim. 180 that? Degrees. So that's the map on the top of page 21. Right?
And according to this, this is our international date line.
Well, not exactly, because you're actually further east of the international date line.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did about Alaska, but...
Whoa.
Our international date line is on a straight line.
Right, exactly, right. So
our international date line is on a straight line. But
it's not. The second international is not a straight line, no. But this is good, because it's arbitrary. You can draw it however you want. But this he drew 180 degrees east of Yerushalayim. Alaska is to the west. Now, I'm not sure what he decided. I assume he put Alaska with the east, meaning with North America. I'm not sure what he did in Alaska.
They marked it. They it's color coded its own.
Yes, I don't know.
Marked Alaska.
Yeah, I don't know what he did with Alaska. We don't know.
He held no one lived there.
Okay, but if you look south of Alaska, it's hard to read. But you have the Hawaiian Islands. You see that? EA Hawaii, mm-hmm. Right above the box.
Yeah.
Hey, do you see that? EA Hawaii, right above the box. Yeah, shall you see it? Yeah. So according to that...
Whose opinion was this?
So this is Rabbi Yechiel Michel to Kaczynski. And many others held like this as well.
He was when?
See, in 1941. He wrote this in 1941.
What was his reasoning? The Chazanish's reasoning was practical because of what you said about it being 18 hours.
Yeah, it's based on the Gemara. So he thought that Gemara was not... Either he held that the other interpretation of the Gemara was correct, or that Gemara was not binding lahalacha as far as determining Hilchot Shabbat. It wasn't meant to be something to determine Hilchot Shabbat, Hilchot Yom Kippur. He uses this midrash. He may have had other sources also, I'm not sure. But he uses this midrash that says Yerushalayim is the center of the world. But what comes out according to him is that most of the places, Japan and Siberia and everything, will be the same as the secular international day. And that's fine. But Hawaii is now... flipped, right? Hawaii, that's on the east of the secular international dateline, according to Rav Tukhachinsky, is to the west of the international dateline. So now you have the opposite. No, Hawaii itself is the whole thing. Hawaii is these tiny islands over here. Hawaii, these tiny islands, to the west of the international dateline. So therefore, you have the opposite problem now. What they call Friday in Hawaii, right, is really Shabbat. What they call Shabbat is really Sunday. I mean, according to the Chazon Ish, in Japan, where they call Shabbat is Friday, where they call Sunday is Shabbat. According to Rabbi Yechiel Michel to Kaczynski, in...
I can't even pronounce
that. Kaczynski, yeah. In Hawaii, so he wrote the Gesher HaChaim. Have you heard of the Gesher HaChaim? It's a very important sefer in Hilchot Avilut. It's like the main, one of the main sefer in Hilchot Avilut, the Gesher HaChaim. It was written by Rabbi Yechiel Michel to Kaczynski also, I believe. So... anyways, so he says, so Hawaii comes to the west. So therefore, what they call Friday in Hawaii, according to him, is Shabbat. What they call Friday is Shabbat is really Sunday, right? So Japan is much better, and New Zealand is much better, because those now are consistent with the secular international dateline. But Hawaii is now flipped, right? Okay, so hopefully next time, Ezra Hashem, we will discuss the third opinion, which basically will try to sort of understand their reasoning, and it's a very interesting concept, but they basically say just to follow whatever people in that place are doing. Very interesting reasoning. Follow whatever the people in that place are doing. We'll see what the answers were, right? And basically you can figure out what the answer, because the Chazon Ish answered and Yechiel Michel to Kaczynski answered, right? Each one answered. But we'll see, we'll try to read inside what some of their answers were. And then we'll try to get into... some of the practical applications, like let's say somebody finished Shabbat and then he crosses over to the other side, or he didn't start Shabbat yet and he crossed, whatever, things like that. So what are going to happen there? Sefirat HaOmer, right? If he, let's say he's gonna, his days are gonna be messed up, Shavuot, all those things. Does he keep his own personal count? Does he follow the count of the place where he was, place where he's going, whatever it is? All those things hopefully will.
Does anyone these days actually follow the
daylight? So follow is a strong word, but chosh.